Some days I wonder, whatever happened to those good old-fashioned fanfares? This program should start with a fanfare.
The other side of this sample Columbia record affords the best possible evidence of the quality of Columbia recordings. It demonstrates the faithfulness of our reproduction of the singing voice, and it is typical of the quality of every record in the entire Columbia list. The standard price of 10-inch Columbia double disc records is 65 cents. As an interesting experiment, as well as a demonstration of the Columbia process of recording instrumental music, you will now hear some of the instruments of the Columbia Orchestra, commencing with the first violin and adding successively the second violin, the viola, cello, flute, bass, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, French horns, bells, cornets, and trombones. Listen carefully and see if you can detect the exact moment at which each instrument is introduced. Remember, Columbia double disc records may be played on either Columbia or Victor machines, and they will unfailingly outwear any other record.
Dad burn it? Every audiophile knows that records just sound better. I'm certainly convinced after hearing that anonymous announcer on that Columbia special advertising record from 1913. Did you hear how pure the tone of those instruments sounded? And could you hear when each instrument entered the orchestra? A lot of fun. That's just a little slice of recording history for you to welcome you to this edition of the Shellac Stack. It's program number 47. My name is Brian Wright. This is a show where I play 78 RPM records from the 19-teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, into the 1950s. A little heavy today on the early stuff, but don't let that scare you away. I think I've picked out some pretty interesting records to listen to today. Along the way, we'll be hearing from Scrappy Lambert, Johnny Johnson, Jimmy Rogers, Eddie South, Ted Lewis, Felix Arndt. A pretty good-looking program, so I hope you'll stay with us. The first record I've got is actually going to be a double-sider. We're going to play both sides of this thing because both sides are pretty good. And I pulled this out because just yesterday I was invited to a friend's house, a friend who hosts every year a Fred Astaire-a-thon. He pulls out a bunch of Fred Astaire movies, invites friends over, and we watch Fred Astaire movies, have a few snacks, visit just a little bit. It's a fun afternoon. And the first movie on the program yesterday was Follow the Fleet. And there are some pretty good Irving Berlin songs that came out of that Fred Astaire film, which came out in 1936. And we'll hear two of them now, played by Johnny Johnson's orchestra. First, Bob Treister sings I'm Putting All My Eggs in One Basket, which is quite a showpiece in the film for Ginger Rogers, who dances on a very nice-looking Art Deco set. And after that, we'll hear Let Yourself Go, Al Jennings doing the vocal honors on that one. Both of these recorded in New York City on January 23rd, 1936, for the American Record Company, which put out these records under a variety of different labels. My copy is on Banner Records, number 6-04-03, which would suggest this was released in April of 1936. A lot of lead-in. Let's just enjoy the music now. Two songs by Irving Berlin, played by Johnny Johnson's orchestra. Thank you.
all my eggs in one basket. I'm betting everything I've got on you. I'm giving all my love to one baby. Lord help me if my baby don't come through. I've got a great big amount saved up in my love account. Honey and I've decided love divided in two won't do. So I'm putting all my eggs in one basket. I'm betting everything I've got on you.
Two songs from the great Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers film Follow the Fleet, performed by Johnny Johnson and his orchestra. First, Bob Treister singing I'm Putting All My Eggs in One Basket, followed by Al Jennings and Let Yourself Go. Well, my good friend Adam Swanson is a fantastic, fantastic pianist in the Baltimore area these days. And these past few months, I had the great pleasure of working with him to release two CDs on my Rivermont label, the first of which was titled Jazz Nocturne and features Adam at the piano playing a number of pop tunes, jazz tunes, some, I guess you'd call it symphonic jazz, things like James P. Johnson's Yamacraw and Dana Suisse and some George Gershwin tunes. It's a really neat CD, which incidentally, shameless plug here, you can pick up at www.rivermontrecords.com if you're so inclined. But one of the things Adam plays on the CD is a medley of Russ Colombo songs, or rather, songs associated with Russ Colombo. Although this next one, Colombo gets at least some composer credit for it. Whether he had anything to do with its composition or not, I don't know, but he certainly got royalties. This is called You Call It Madness, But I Call It Love. And we're going to hear Anthony Trini and his orchestra on a Mellotone 78 do this. Anthony Trini is the uncredited vocalist here from September of 1931, Mellotone record 12243. And after that, we'll hear something from Scrappy Lambert under the name Harold Lambert from 1927, a song so well known I scarcely need to introduce it, so we'll let it come along as it will. But first, Anthony Trini and You Call It Madness, But I Call It Love.
Thank you. stop the traffic to Dixie. Hold it right on the line. Don't want nothing come betwixt me and that old home of mine. I'm so tired and so lonely. Every hour seems a day. For there's one and one only understands when I say, I'm coming, Virginia. I'm coming to stay. Don't hold it again. To forget you and found I'm all wrong. Neath your bright southern moon, once more I'll croon a dear old mammy tune. And if I can win ya, I'll never more roam. Coming, Virginia, my Dixieland
resting performance of that classic song by Scrappy Lambert singing I'm Coming, Virginia, recorded in August of 1927 in New York City. I sure wish I knew who the pianist was on that. I don't. He sounds almost like Fred Elizalde with those soft, understated, very impressionistic chords, but by August of 1927, I'm pretty sure Elizalde was over in England, so I don't think it was him, but I don't know who it could be. Very nice record, though, issued on the Lincoln label, number 2681, Scrappy Lambert. Before that, Anthony Trini and his orchestra, A Mellotone 78 from September of 1931. You call it madness, but I call it love. Well, at the beginning of the program, if you'll recall, I played a Columbia special advertising record, extolling the virtues of Columbia's recording process back in the early decades of the 20th century. Well, we're going to have a chance to put that to the test now with a record from about April of 1907. This is Columbia A-177, the cellist Victor Sorlin. Victor Sorlin, not a lot of information out there on the guy. He seems to have been fairly popular around the New York City area in the first decade of the 20th century. He performed locally, he performed in person quite a bit, and made a handful of records for both Columbia and Victor, or as they would say at the time, and the Victor. Victor Sorlin, unfortunately, died, it would seem, at the age of 34 of pneumonia in November of 1912. Thankfully, we still have some records of his, and I find this next one a very charming record. It's a well-known tune by Gounod, Ave Maria, based on the Bach prelude. After that, we'll turn to something completely different. We're going to head out to Hawaii for a little thing by the Hilo Hawaiian Orchestra called Sweet Hawaiian Dreams. But first, here's Victor Sorlin and Ave Maria.
Thank you.
And that's Victor record number 20022, recorded in New York City on February 2nd, 1926, by a group of, I'm sure, studio musicians who had probably never even set foot in Hawaii, and yet going under the name of the Hilo Hawaiian Orchestra, that's Sweet Hawaiian Dreams, a tune, believe it or not, written by Arthur Coleman and Mitchell Parrish. Before that, Victor Sorland, the cellist, playing Ave Maria, recorded in April of 1907, and even if not quite as clear and pure of tone as the Victor, or the Columbia announcer might have led us to believe on that advertising record that started the program, nevertheless, I don't think it sounds too bad at all for a record that is nearing its 108th birthday in just another 2 months. Victor Sorland, great record, the Ave Maria. Well, I pause here because these next two records certainly merit something of an explanation. There are others out there who can state far more eloquently than I can the need to not forget and to not bury and cover up those records of the early 20th century which modern listeners find distasteful and offensive. And there are certainly a lot of them, as any of you who have dug through crates of old 78s will know. Making fun of certain ethnic groups and the tradition of the old minstrel shows was still considered fairly acceptable in the early 20th century. And however hateful we may see these records as being these days, I don't think many of them were necessarily intended that way. Nevertheless, as I said, they were very popular. And these next two, I debated whether or not I should play them, and I've decided to go ahead with it. Though if you find this sort of thing extremely uncomfortable, you may wish to fast forward the next 7 or 8 minutes or so if you don't wish to hear these. Nevertheless, I think they're worth listening to, for no other reason than because there's really some great music here, even if in one case the title and in the other case some of the spoken dialogue and lyrics can be rather offensive. The first one is credited only anonymously. The discography reveals that it's probably Frank S. Mazziota playing the piccolo on this record. It's a standard disc record, which is really just a Columbia record with a label pasted over it that says standard disc record, number A214, which would correspond to Columbia A214, recorded in about December of 1901. Frank S. Mazziota playing his own composition, the name of which I am going to abstain from uttering because I don't want to go on record saying this, the first word. It's a two-word title, the first of which starts with an N, and you can probably guess what it is. The second word in the title is fever, so make of that what you will. Nevertheless, it's actually a very neat little tune, instrumental, played on the piccolo with some really interesting piano accompaniment. I hope you'll enjoy that. After that, we're going to hear, horror of horrors, Billy Golden, who was one of the most popular performers in vaudeville and in the minstrel tradition in the late 19th century, who started recording in the early 1890s for Berliner and continued recording for Columbia, Edison, Victor, all of the major labels well into the 19-teens. Actually, he may have even continued into the early 1920s before he died in 1926. But Billy Golden, going back to the beginning, started out in vaudeville at the age of 16, and by the turn of the century was recognized as really one of the greatest of the minstrel entertainers. And his greatest success was Turkey in the Straw. He recorded this many, many times for, again, practically every label in operation at the time. We're going to hear the Columbia recording that was made in November of 1902. And the reason I play this, as much as one may cringe at Billy Golden's attempts to imitate black dialect, one of the reasons that I, and not to mention his choice of words, one of the reasons I play this, though, is because the piano is really a remarkable example of some early ragtime piano caught on record. There aren't very many examples of that out there. And the other is because Billy Golden displays a very interesting, I think, syncopated way of singing, syncopated way of, well, it's hard to call it all singing, it's more like talking, almost rapping even, But listen carefully to the phrasing of this, because it's really quite remarkable for the time, especially if you compare it against the records being made by people like, Henry Burr or Albert Campbell or some of those more staid tenors that were popular on record of the day. Billy Golden comes across as really quite wild. So, again, with apologies for any offense, and none is intended by playing these, I'm not celebrating what's going on here. Rather, I think it's worth remembering these unfortunate instances of our cultural past, if nothing else, to learn from them, and hopes that this kind of entertainment will not become popular again. But enough of the enough of that. Let's just listen to him. Here's Frank S. Mazziota.
Down that possum's back will make a nigger when she slips pull him to slack. another gold scallop. Well, as I was a climb down the road, I met Mr. Topper and I met Miss Toad. Yeah, what time Mr. Topper would sing, see that old toad cut the pigeon wing. I looked at
comes to treating other people with dignity and respect and just basic human decency, sometimes I think it's worth remembering that the so-called good old days weren't necessarily all that good. Billy Golden and the problematic but nevertheless historically interesting Turkey in the Straw, Columbia A295 from November of 1902. Before that, Frank S. Matsyota at the Piccolo, his own composition, which you can look up if you'd like to know it. It's Columbia A214 on this label issued as Standard Disc Record A214. And if you've ever seen a standard disc record, you know that the name is somewhat ironic because they're anything but standard. They would take these Columbia records, paste over them with their own label, and then drill out the center spindle hole to be about twice as large because standard disc phonographs used a much larger spindle than normal. I think the idea was that if they sold you the phonograph, you'd have to come back to them for records because regular Columbia and Victor records would not fit on the spindle. And so you were locked into buying their own records, although I think a lot of people very quickly figured out how to take a drill bit and enlarge the hole of whatever record they wanted to buy so that it would fit on a standard phonograph. Well, on to something now that's maybe not going to generate lots of unhappy email in my inbox. Jimmy Rogers, the father of, well, sometimes called the father of country music. One of his early recordings from November 30th, 1927. He traveled all the way to Camden, New Jersey to make this. It's his celebrated Blue Yodel.
T for Texas, T for Tennessee. T for Texas, T for Tennessee. T for Thelma, that gal that made a wreck out of me. Ole, ole, ole. If you don't want me, mama, you sure don't have to stop. If you don't want me, mama, you sure don't have to stall. Cause I can get more women than a passenger train can haul. Ole, ole, ole. I'm gonna buy me a pistol just as long as I'm tall. Lord, Lord, I'm gonna buy me a pistol just as long as I'm tall. I'm gonna shoot poor Thelma just to see her jump and fall. Oh, lady, lady, oh, lady. I'm going where the water cherry wine. Sing 'em, boy, sing 'em. Lord, I'm going where the water drinks like cherry wine. Cause the Georgia water tastes like turpentine. Oh, lady, lady, oh, lady. buy me a shotgun with a great long shiny barrel. Gonna buy me a shotgun with a great long shiny barrel. I'm gonna shoot that rounder that stole away my gal. Rather drink muddy water and sleep in a hollow log than to be in Atlanta treated like a dirty dog. Put a little
Eddie South, the violinist, and his Alabamians, from December 9th, 1927, recorded in Chicago. That's Victor 21151, a tune which, I'll confess, I don't normally get real excited about, but I love the way Eddie South plays it, By the Waters of the Minnetonka. And before that, Jimmy Rogers and his great Blue Yodel, recorded just about a week and a half earlier over in Camden, New Jersey, also for Victor Records, November 30th, 1927. That was Victor 21142. Well, like many of you, I've been watching Boardwalk Empire, and I was saddened to see that this most recent season, the fifth, was the last in the series, and I got into it really because of the wonderful music furnished by Vince Giordano's Nighthawks, played beautifully in period-authentic style, And the series, if a bit violent, nevertheless had some engaging and rather complex characters, and was just the set decorations, really. I mean, I could go on and on, but I won't. What this is all boiling down to is that, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, the last season features prominently some scenes that take place in Cuba, and especially with some recent political events in mind and the forecasted normalizing of relations with Cuba, I was prompted to pull out this record by Ted Lewis and his jazz band, recorded March 14th, 1920. Ted Lewis does the whistling, but thankfully doesn't sing here. Another Irving Berlin tune, same guy who wrote Let Yourself Go and I'm Putting All My Eggs in One Basket, 15, 16 years earlier, had written this, I'll See You in C-U-B-A. Might make an interesting exercise sometime to count the songs that were written right around 1919 and 1920, having to do with the onset of Prohibition and especially travel that people were contemplating as a way of getting to places where drinking alcoholic beverages was going to be still legal in 1920. March 1920 there, and the Ted Lewis Jazz Band, I'll See You in C-U-B-A. And all throughout the 20s, there are all kinds of other songs. Hello, Montreal. Of course, I'm going to blank out now, but quite a few of them having to do with going other places where people can drink. Well, that brings us to the end of this Shellac Stack program. But before we go, I'd like to give a quick shout out to my friend Norm over at the Talking Machine podcast. Norm was kind enough to mention the Shellac Stack on his most recent program. His is a show where he talks about his own life and plays a few records on each program. If you'd like more information, I'm sure you can type it into Google or your search engine of choice, the Talking Machine podcast with Norm. It's also on iTunes, which reminds me to mention that so is the Shellac Stack. If you haven't already subscribed to the Shellac Stack in iTunes, you can do so and have future podcasts in this series downloaded automatically to your computer as soon as they are released. That way you don't have to keep going back and checking the website. They'll just come to you automatically. Of course, if you'd like to visit the website, I welcome you to stop by there as well. It's just www.shellacstack.com, and there's a little link there for now that will redirect you to the new Shellac Stack webpage, which is part of my own personal site, www.briansright.com. Of course, you can always just search Shellac Stack with Brian Wright and find your way to the page as well. So, quick recap. Check out Norm's program. Check out the Shellac Stack in iTunes, and hope you'll visit the website. And while you're there, maybe you can send me a message if you feel so inclined. You don't need to tell me that you don't like hearing Billy Golden. I promise there won't be too many more of those in the near future. But any other email I welcome from you, if you'd like to just say hello, let me know where you're listening to the program from. That's always welcome as well. Well, it's time for the last record today now, and this is a really charming one. Felix Arndt, another sort of sad story of a great artist and composer lost to us too soon, died in the great influenza epidemic in 1918. But here he is in November of 1914 playing a Stephen Foster composition, The Old Folks at Home, sometimes known as Suwannee River. What's a little different here is he's playing this on a celeste, and it really cuts through the acoustic recording process so well that you'd almost swear this is an electric record. It's very warm sounding, very mellow, and just beautifully played, and a wonderful way to end today's program on a pleasant note. So here's Felix Arndt, The Old Folks at Home. Thanks again for listening, everyone. I'll see you next time for more 78s on the Shellac Stack. Until next time, take care.